Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 40, big 4-0, I guess. And, you know, it's been a pretty slow week, I think, this week. Nothing really noteworthy has come through the news cycle, at least. I feel like some weeks we struggle more than others with finding topics to talk about, to the point where, like, some weeks it feels like almost like we're going to have a pointless show not a good show. And this week I felt like it was one of those weeks where there was no clear, like, these are definitely the three topics we need to talk about. But we managed to come up with some, and I guess we can start off the first one being all this stuff that's been going on with Facebook and now Google. It's kind of coming out, I feel like, a little bit of a symptom of, like, a longer term problem of, you know, philosophies that are constantly at war, those philosophies being, you know, being open-handed with data and being okay with that, and companies like Google and Facebook being very, very powerful and taking advantage of that data. And in many cases, customers who don't really care whether or not those companies have that data, and Apple, which has kind of taken a hardline stance. But lately, or yesterday, I guess the short version of what happened yesterday was TechCrunch reported that there's an app called Facebook Research that Facebook has been, I guess the first part of the controversy is that they're targeting it at teens, which Facebook came out in a statement saying that it's only, you know, being used by a single digit percentage number of teens in terms of their overall usage of the app. But they did get, I mean, TechCrunch reported that they were actually targeting teenagers in Snapchat. So, and also on top of that, kind of just like shielding the fact that it was a Facebook thing until the very end of the setup process or whatever. And so that's controversial for a lot of reasons, a lot of higher level concerns with that. And I guess the other layer of this is that Facebook's taking advantage of an enterprise certificate, which, for those that aren't in the loop, Apple devices, you can install enterprise certificates which are intended to be used for developers, large organizations like Facebook or companies, to set up profiles on phones to install certain apps, and kind of bypass the App Store. And in that case, you know, companies and organizations can run apps that may or may not have actually been approved through the App Store or don't need to be on the App Store because the only way they're being used is internally. It's also used for, you know, organizations like Facebook and Google who are dogfooding early versions of apps on internal devices. And it turns out that in this case, Facebook was using a Apple Enterprise profile on iOS devices as the means by which users were installing this app, which basically opts you in for sharing every single piece of data that goes in and out of your phone with Facebook for purposes of research. For $20 a month. So yeah, I mean, that's the Facebook side of things. And then today, the Google part. So you want to give us the...
Google, for the past few years, has run a program called ScreenWise. This is, you can think of it as like a Nielsen TV analytics, but for the digital web. So basically, you install a similar profile on iOS, or there's also an Android app that works normally, that can see what pages you're viewing, what services you're using, videos, that kinds of thing. Like, the end goal of all these services, of what Google and Facebook are trying to do, is to find user interest and preempt them all in the name of research. Google's solution can be a bit more aggressive because they have this physical component that you, I believe, attach to your router, and it finds information, it filters information through there. But on the flip side, Google is more upfront about it. They just said in a statement just a few minutes ago that Google doesn't look at encrypted data and that sort of thing. So again, all this is for user customer research, and something which Apple is taking a hard stand against on its own platforms. for both Facebook and Google, they've shown no sign that they're going to stop doing this on Android. And
yeah, it's kind of complicated, but I guess something to know on the Google side of things is that this app isn't new, and so the news today that TechCrunch is reporting is not exactly, I think, that this app is, you know, a new thing or a hot topic, because I mean, feel like, you know, yeah, the privacy conversation has been getting heated as of late, but the news is not that the app exists. That conversation and I guess the debate over whether or not the app should exist is kind of a tired debate, and it's been happening for a long time. But today the news is that, I guess the reason that the Google stuff is news is because with the Facebook situation, the way Apple responded, the hard line that you're describing, the way Apple responded to Facebook using enterprise profiles to or certificates to install these apps is actually against their policies for how people can use these enterprise certificates. And so what happened at Facebook actually is that since Apple revoked their enterprise certificate, all of their internal testing of all of their apps for iOS is completely been turned off. Like, apparently Facebook engineers are just completely unable to launch the internal early versions, dog food versions of their apps. And
but more importantly, they can't access internal tools.
Oh yeah, like that too.
Bus schedule, yeah. Or the lunch menu, for
yeah,
example.
All of those,
so it's an aggressive
apps, yeah.
Which you have to ask why the people who are in charge of Facebook research decided to use the same certificate.
Yeah,
that is.
I don't know
question.
The specifics or the details on that. But today we're learning that ScreenWise, which is an app that's been around for years, is installed via the same method. So Apple's kind of put into a position where if they want to police things fairly, then it seems to me that they have to also revoke the certificate that Google's using to install this app. Although, I don't know if you mentioned this, but Google is kind of treating this a little bit differently, and it seems like they're being more straightforward about what the app's using. So maybe the line that Facebook or that Apple's drawing in the sand of what is and isn't allowed is not necessarily that enterprise certificates profiles are being used to install apps on, you know, public consumer devices, but rather something specifically about the way Facebook's being shady about the way they're handling this.
Yeah, the Google's in its response and looking at the ScreenWise documentation, it's very straightforward what this is for. And if we want to compare like the incentive structure, Google is paying people up to $400 a month compared to Facebook's $20. Not that it should matter. But
right.
In terms of disclosure and like research, it seems that Google is more clear about it. But there's also another aspect to what Facebook is doing. So this dates back to, I have no idea how to pronounce it, Onavu or
yeah,
Onavo. That Facebook originally bought as a VPN. But one thing that many have criticized them for doing is that while it is a VPN, Facebook has also been using it to track the consumer interest and behavioral changes of users. This is quite aggressive. Yes, you're getting a VPN to secure your data, but at the same time, the VPN provider is looking at all this information. And I believe last year, Apple took the step of removing the VPN app due to violations of
right.
the same policies. So the less generous view of what Facebook has been doing was they got caught, they got kicked out, but they still want to conduct this kind of research. So they hid it, they tried to be deceptive about it, and now they're caught again.
Right. And I guess the question remains is on Google's side of things, is Apple going to have to turn off Google's app, or is Google going to get away with it, so to speak, because they did not try to be? You know, this wasn't... It seems like the way Google did this is, you know, the conversation of the ethics of whether or not these apps should exist in the first place is, you know... That aside, the way Google went about it seems to be much less shady than Facebook. And so, I don't know. I know that there have been tons of other apps and other organizations that have misused enterprise profiles to install apps on consumer phones and kind of bypass the app store. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago there was a really popular emulator or whatever that, you know, this company had managed to get an enterprise profile and certificate or whatever and managed to offer it on their website for download, and it was installing, people were able to install it on non-jailbroken iPhones that way. And that was a case where Apple obviously revoked that certificate for obvious reasons. And so the question is, you know, where exactly is the line, and is Google breaking the line, or is what Google's doing, is it authorized, have they gotten, you know, the all clear from Apple to do what they're doing? It's still yet to be seen, and I'm actually trying to reach out to a couple people at Google who would be able to let me know immediately if and when Apple decides to revoke their certificate, but I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem likely. Not only is the way Google handling it seem to be far less shady, it seems like Apple would have a lot more to lose by pissing off Google.
Yeah. And so there's the internal debate and there's like the research debate. I'm pretty sure Google's internal applications are web-based versus like actual apps, so they might be fine there. But in terms of development, yeah, I'm not sure how that would affect Google's iOS development, which is very important to Google, as that is where a lot of its users are,
right,
on iPhones and iPads. So yeah, significant difference. And
yeah. I just imagine that there's lots of like FaceTime group calling. not this week, because FaceTime grouping is, that's a whole other conversation that we're not going to have because this is not an Apple podcast. But
I just want to add, amazing timing for Apple.
Yeah,
fantastic,
right?
Timing
and
incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. And also a good opportunity, I think, for Duo. Side note, I think it's a really good opportunity for Duo to launch their web app, which I reported on this past week. I think because FaceTime's obviously under heat right now, so it's like, you know, it would make a lot of sense for Duo to come up with and hit it hard with a lot of really good features and you know, put some oil or put some gasoline on the fire. Duo.
Duo web app.
Yeah. But anyways, I was saying, I imagine there's lots of calls happening right now between Cook and Sundar and Zuckerberg.
Very high level negotiations.
Yeah, this seems like the kind of thing that CEOs are probably very directly involved with. But yeah, so I guess we could talk a little bit about Duo. That wasn't on the show notes, but I mean that was a report that happened this week. Last Friday, I reported that Duo Google's planning to add a web app to Duo, which is, you know, kind of not that surprising, but it's going to happen soon in the coming weeks, probably before. For the end of March, I'd guess. And basically, it's a web app, you know, duo.google.com/web or whatever, and it'll be pretty much the full functionality of Duo on mobile devices, but on the web.
Yeah, so Duo, of course, it's the Google's one bright spot in consumer messaging these past few months. The web calling is a great feature because otherwise you can use Duo on Chromebooks by installing the Android app, but of course that doesn't help anybody else on Mac and Windows and Linux. So this is a great way to do direct face calls. But at the same time, what Google also needs to launch for Duo is group calling. They still don't have that functionality, and this would be perfect timing in the light of FaceTime to offer another group calling video competitor. The web app itself is it comes as Hangouts is shutting down eventually, and Hangouts Meet hasn't had a chance to properly roll out to regular consumers. So Duo has a lot of exciting features planned, it seems like, in the coming months.
Yeah, for sure. Actually, this week, there was a tweet in response to Scott Johnson. And I would say that it did a really good job of summarizing kind of Google's ignorance on Hangouts. And it kind of asked this question. I'll try and find it real quick so I can read it. Here it is. It is a tweet from a guy named David. I'm assuming a reader of the site. So, you know, hey, David, what's up? He says, I would love to know how I'm supposed to video chat with the grandparents with my newborn at Christmas and how I can use instant message to share photos in Gmail on my phone. Do I set up an organization and schedule a meeting? And this was kind of in response to Scott's, you know, rebuttal to my report that, you know, Hangouts is going to continue to live on and in the form of chat and meet. And this is just one of the many people, like, layers of confusion that people are landing at, is that, you know, Hangouts is going away and being replaced by Hangouts Chat and Meet, which Google says is Hangouts not going away. But the reality of it is people have been using Hangouts for these very consumer-facing use cases like calling grandma, and it doesn't make sense anymore to use Hangouts Chat and Hangouts Meet for those use cases. And that's kind of where my Duo report this week comes in, is that it's very obvious that Google is saying, you know, these consumer use cases that you were using Hangouts for a really long time, that's now moving to Duo. You're not going to be calling grandma in Hangouts Meet. Right now, you can't call grandma in Hangouts Meet. We do know that Hangouts Chat is going to reach feature parity with old Hangouts, but in the end of the day, what's going to happen is these two apps are still enterprise-focused primarily, and users are going to use them for team use cases, as Google has outlined. They've kind of outlined that Hangouts Chat and Hangouts Meet are to be used for teams, and then, you know, messages and Duo for friends and family. So anyway, that's just a tangent and something that's just like building on the conversation we've been having for several weeks, which is that Hangouts is dead, but it's not. You know, Google says it's not, but in the eyes of the normal person, it is. And I think it would do Google, I would do Google really well, actually, to say that, you know, because if they're public about the fact that old Hangouts is going away, they can tell people, you know, what it's being replaced with. And
yeah,
and it's very clear that they're replacing with Duo, but that's just not what the messaging is. The messaging is no, Hangouts isn't being killed, stop it, don't report that. And it's just very counterproductive, in my opinion.
The way Google interacts with like consumer audiences is interesting, because Allo and Duo were announced as the first things at I/O 2016. And again, that's a developer conference, but of course regular people watch it. But I think it speaks to how for Google, it is very hard to communicate directly with regular consumers. I think Google, more than any other company, relies heavily on like the press and word of mouth to get its products across. We've seen something like Made by Google have a direct say in detailing what its hardware vision is, but Google's software organization has never had that clarity or that press conference for consumers to benefit the Western market. Surprisingly, like Google for India and those other developing regions, Google does host consumer-facing software events that introduce their new products to the region, but we've yet to see that same scale of like a Made by Google event, but just for consumer software. Again, like, I don't think software would technically work.
Yeah,
you can't bundle software all for a 1 yearly announcement. Yeah. It just gets announced when it's ready.
Yeah, so I think
it is a real challenge.
I think one of the problems is that with Google's approach to things, you know, it's very, you know, as we know with Google, everything's an A/B test, right? And so it's like, if Google is going to announce the direction that everything is moving in advance, then you're already prescribing the end result of the A-B test, right? So it's like,
yeah.
Whenever Duo was announced, they can't come out and say Duo will replace Hangouts, because what if Duo didn't get traction, right? Because then they're committing to something that was not the winner in the A-B test, you know? And so it's like, the same thing goes for Allo. It's like a really good thing that Google didn't come out and say, Allo is the next, you know, you should move today. Hangouts users, you're migrating to Allo, like, right, whatever. Like, if they said that and then Allo never got traction, then, you know, they have
just lost their millions.
Exactly.
Millions of users right there.
Exactly. And so, I mean, Apple's approach is very different. Just to use one example, Apple's approach is they're extremely conservative about launching new products, and they don't launch anything unless they know for sure that it's going to be a success, or they know very confidently that it's going to be a success. And then when they decide that it's going to be success, they launch it and they put all of their weight behind it, and they make it very clear that this is the direction that things are going and that you just have to deal with it, basically. Google is far more open-handed and far more, you know, reckless about launching products, and you can't have both. And so, you know, I think that Google does communicate well in some areas. It's surprising. I mean, they have an entire blog dedicated to every minutia change that comes to every G Suite product, right? So it's like they know how to communicate
for the enterprise,
for the paying customer. But they treat the end user consumer like, you know, I don't know,
a byproduct.
Yeah, it's like they. I know it's the cliche to say that if you're not paying for the product, then you're the product. but it really does feel that way sometimes with the Google products, because, you know,
I guess that Google has a very
everything's always
word of mouth approach. Yeah, it's always morphing. It's always experimenting. Google, it wants to experiment at scale, and it's unclear if that works, but Google's path to victories with search, and especially Chrome, has always been, it's a small announcement, people start using it, more people, word of mouth, that kind of thing. They've never explicitly foisted all their brand new product users and say, just use it. It's always been more, we make it available, and they kind of want the market to decide whether it's successful and whether they continue development.
Right.
And that is a very true at Chrome. But it's like for everything else, there's other minor products that, I don't know, has under 100 million users or so. It's hard for Google to just go out and say, this is the brand new thing that's replacing a thing, like you were saying earlier.
Yeah.
So how does Google fix this software branding problem? Or is it just consigned to like waiting for big hits?
Yeah, I don't know. With the way things are now, it just seems like that's the way they find success, is that they just, you know, it's like throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks. And the things that don't stick, they still pick them up off the ground and they use them to build something else to throw at the wall, right?
Yeah, technologies. It's like they care more about the technologies sometimes. Right.
Yeah, they care more about the it seems like they do, that they care more about the technology, underlying technology that's being developed as a result of the product rather than the actual product. And it works to a degree. It just also doesn't work fairly often.
And it's like great for innovation, but it's not necessarily great for users, which has always been Google's problem, I guess.
Yeah. And I kind of, on a side note, I'll throw this in here. We don't know what to think of this, but just for Alphabet Scoop listeners, just so that you can be a little bit on the in to what we're talking about and the little tips and crumbs that we're following for stories. Tell your friends to listen to Alphabet Scoop if they want this kind of access to information. But we're hearing that Duo is kind of in that situation where Google's really, you know, obviously the product Google Duo is taking off and has been really successful, but the underlying technology too seems to be well revered inside Google. And so I wouldn't be surprised.
It's RTC, real-time communication.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised to see the underlying technology of Duo being used in other products in the near future. And by near, I mean like a year or two. That's all we'll say on that for now. But We've heard some things about Duo and kind of where that's going in the long run. Thankfully, I don't think, and I have not interpreted anything that we've heard so far to mean that Google Duo is going anywhere. So if you're a trusty Google Duo user, I wouldn't worry about going to find an alternative. Although with Google,
yeah, we can be having this discussion a year later, and that a decade later even, and that'll always be the criticism. And it's wait till Fuchsia replaces Android or Chrome OS or whatever that happens. It's going to, that critique will always be there, and it's unknown how Google can overcome that, really.
Yeah. Speaking of products that are shutting down, we heard today a little bit of an update on the Google Plus situation, which is that Google Plus is officially... Google previously announced that Google Plus is shutting down in April, and today they nailed that down, and it's going to be the second earliest day in April possible. So it's coming up quick. April 2nd will be the official...
April 2nd.
Yeah.
April Fools, that's, of course.
Yeah.
The day after that, so... That's gonna
don't want to leave. Don't want to leave any confusion there. It is shutting down. It's not a joke.
Yeah, and nobody's going to miss it.
But interestingly, as our Ben Schoen reported, based on Google's blog post, some dates are actually sooner than that. So, as soon as February 4th, which is 5 days from now, Google says that some features related to Google Plus will be killed off. The platform will no longer accept new profiles, pages, communities, or events. So basically creating anything new on Google Plus is kind of going away in just a few days. I don't know why you would want to create a new community or a new profile if you're very well aware that the platform is
shutting down. Want to be the last one there. I fully intend to be on April 2nd. I fully intend to be the last Google Plus post on that network.
Good luck. I wish you luck. I would guess that you're not the only person with that plan.
I want that record.
Also, Blogger will drop Google Plus comments on that same date, February 4th, and that functionality will start being removed from other sites. So many sites still to this day have Google Plus as the comment system. There are some third-party plugins for WordPress and other blogging CMSs. And those will all shut down on March 7th, which is my birthday, by the way. And then on April 2nd, the consumer version of Google Plus will be shut down entirely. And Google says that it may take months for all of that data to completely disappear from the web.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's it.
Rip in peace.
I think we should start talking about creation from destruction. So, Gmail got a lovely material theme on Tuesday. It's the one that we spotted last July at Google's Cloud Developer Conference. And it was the exact same one that we captured in screenshots. So basically the core functionality, the core navigation is unchanged in the new Gmail app. I'm using it right now and I'm not noticing any significant difference. I guess the biggest change in terms of navigation is how you switch accounts. Everything is very bright. But otherwise, this is just basically a new skin. And I think it's fine, despite how bright it is.
Yeah,
have you had the chance to use it?
I haven't yet, but I'm very excited to see dark mode finally come to Gmail.
Yes,
that's honestly, I'm going to try and stick on the old one as long as possible until I can have dark mode.
I promise you, you won't miss much. It's a good transition. It's a good clean. It definitely looks more modern, and while I wouldn't say it's like a consistent experience with the new revamped Gmail website, it's sometimes new things are nice.
Have we checked, out of curiosity, have we checked the difference between this update and the version that leaked, so to speak, back at I.O.? because at the time, whenever it leaked, Google said that it was just a designer mock-up or something like that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think that was you, wasn't it?
I think it was Ron. I think it was Ron.
Maybe you were at the me thing, but...
No, I mean, it is. We both tweeted it. I was at the meeting, but...
But yeah, no, it's different. If I remember correctly, the most significant part of the Google I.O. leak was a bottom bar with fab, with a scented fab. And for the, again, as I said earlier, this design is just basically a reskin of the current, of the past Gmail experience. Let me, I'll find that article quickly, or you, if you can. But no, it's nothing that radical, and I don't think that something like Gmail could take a radical design departure, because the navigation drawer versus a bottom bar is still an important way to access all your labels for people who use Gmail that way. So I don't think we're going to see too significant a Gmail rethink, but maybe the next update would do that. The next, as Google Material Theme iterates, maybe we'll get a whole new navigation.
Yeah, so that's Gmail. It's not really the biggest story of the year, but it's worth mentioning, I think, because it took like 9 months for Google to... I don't know how many months. Several months for Google to finally roll that out after they first... I mean, Google Material Themes started rolling out, and at the time, Matias Duarte told us that we would see Material Themes start rolling out across all of Google's apps just slowly, kind of like in a rollout kind of fashion. And he also stressed that the most important apps for Google as a company would be the most conservative. And it, I guess it makes sense that Gmail was the last one, pretty much the last one, one of the last ones. Are there any other major apps on Android that haven't yet?
Google Drive, I think. But we also spotted a change for Google Drive last July, but this is actually a more major change compared to something like Gmail. Google Drive is supposed to adopt a bottom bar, and it's quite a significant feature as a change as part of a new using smart AI stuff to surface interesting content for you, interesting files for you that need your attention. So I think the Google Drive update, whenever it's coming, it will be a bigger revamp for the Android and iOS apps. We saw Photos relatively quickly, a Material Theme for Photos. I guess the Play Store could use one. It's pseudo Material Theme.
I can't think of an example off the top of my head. Actually, I can. I can think of like Google Home. So like, what's interesting to me is that some apps actually, before the Google Material Theme was announced and was actually official, already sported a Google Material Theme-esque kind of design. And Google Home app was one of those. Google actually, at the meeting last year, they talked about Google Home as being one of the apps that already had the Google Material Theme. It's just we didn't have a name for it at that point. What's been interesting to see is how those apps that already had it have since been redesigned completely to get it even more, kind of. The Google Home app, I think a few months ago, was completely redesigned now to, I don't remember, was that last month? I don't know. I can't remember. I can't keep my timeline straight. But, you know, completely redesigned October, to have a home screen that gives you access to all your smart home devices and stuff, and completely redesigned home it with view. Bar and the little the floating action button in the middle, which is a new aspect of the Google of Material Theming in general. That app got updated with even more Google Material stuff after already being Material. So I wonder if we'll see that in other apps.
Yeah.
But
the constant iteration is a thing for Google, of course.
Absolutely. Also, this week, Google I.O. So Google I.O., pretty much every January is kind of announced, basically. Announced. Every year for the last several years, Google has had some kind of cryptic announcement that has piqued the interest of developers. It wasn't that long ago that a lot of that festivities were kind of centered on Google Plus. Obviously, that hasn't been the case for the last couple years because Google Plus has been pretty much dead. But last year, the puzzle was pretty quickly solved. I mean, I think it took a few hours for people to really work their way through it. And as far as I saw, there were dozens of people that made it to the end, like genuinely made it through the puzzle and made it to the end and got free Google I.O. tickets from it. This year, I'm not aware of a single person that has solved a puzzle yet.
Yeah. By the time May comes and nobody has solved it, I really want Google to post a solution because
it seems really cryptic and really hard this year.
Yeah, because like Sundar Pichai ordered it last year because it was solved so quickly.
Probably
the boss orders it, and here we are. Something. Everybody should watch that video. It's 2 minutes. There's this weird, like AI voice thingy that's very. Very disturbing, in my opinion. It's a new age futuristic voice that's reading a 12-line, I don't know, poem, instructions, I guess, and nobody has figured it out yet. So
that we know of. I'm assuming that there will be at least one person that solves it. I mean, it might be that there will be only like one or two people that actually solve it genuinely and get some kind of huge prize package or something. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, I would think they deserve it at this point.
Yeah, totally. But anyways, what we found out just minutes after that this kind of puzzle was kicked off was that Google just accidentally left everything hidden in plain sight on the website itself, basically. And someone found it within like 3 minutes. Someone managed to find like basically the end solution of the puzzle. Some of the JSON that was for generating the you found or like you made it through the puzzle page, basically. And it talked about, you know, the event being held May 7th through 9th. It's going to be at Shoreline again, which this is now its
4th year,
but that doesn't include the OG Google I.O. So 5th year, if you include the very, very first I.O.
In Mountain View.
We have the basic details. So Google I.O. 2019. It's happening. Sundar came out and confirmed May 7th through 9th. So I'm excited.
Yeah, it's our biggest, well, one of our bigger days of the year.
Yeah, and I guess the perfect segue here is that Google I.O. is primarily going to be a show about Android Q, which we still have no idea what that's going to be called. You tweeted this week, Quesadilla.
Yeah, which I like that.
Seems like a half decent option.
Quiche is too much, though. That's the obvious one, but it's a bit much.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's a tasty treat, right? And
yeah,
but every year it's never gone to something that's not primarily sugar.
That's fair.
And so it may be a tasty treat, which could be a quesadilla. I mean, I think quesadillas can be a tasty treat. Especially if you get like a dessert one with like Nutella on the inside or something.
Indeed.
There's no example as of yet of something that's kind of savory. And so that doesn't leave many options.
Yeah. It's pie. I don't think pie was never a top contender for everybody's guessing.
No, it wasn't.
I think popcorn was the obvious treat.
Or popsicle.
Or popsicle. Yeah, popsicle. That'd been nice. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I don't have any good ideas for what Q will be. And that might actually be a really good opportunity for Google to stop naming them. And
no, it's whimsical. Never. Never.
Well, it's going to stop eventually. It will. There will be an end. There will be the very last named Android version. That will happen, and whether that's this year or in 5 years, or
I will write
in 10
a
years.
Google Kills Whimsy article if they stop doing
there's
this.
There's always two more that come from everyone that they kill, so I'm not worried.
Yeah.
So what did we learn about Android Q system UI this week?
So it's more than likely it's going to be version 10.0, because whenever you enable the UI demo mode to take screenshots, it shows a time. This year it's 10.10, so it's going to be most likely Android 10.0 K something, Q something. But so from the system UI APK that we were able to acquire, we saw facial recognition support, which XDA on Friday evening also saw at the same time from a different source. But yeah, so facial recognition, true hardware-based facial recognition with various sensors are coming in Android Q. And this is exactly how the iPhone X supports flood projectors, IR sensors, and that kind of stuff to read you in the dark, versus like what companies are doing with just pure facial recognition and matching and identification. So this should be way more secure than existing measures, and that's good as more and more companies start moving to adopt facial recognition tech. But yeah, so far that is the marquee feature of what we're expecting. There's of course some like useful tools like screen recalling versus just screenshotting. We are very likely going to see WPA3 support on the system level, which is the new Wi-Fi standard, 5G support in terms of the status bar showing that new indicator. But of course companies like AT&T are already pushing 5G+, which we also saw in the system UI APK. But yeah, we're getting bits and pieces of what Android Q is quite early this year.
Yeah,
we've never
definitely.
Had a January drop of information.
No, they haven't. And usually, or at least for the last few years, the first developer preview has come in March. So we're still a month or two away from seeing the very first public release. I guess you wouldn't call that a public release. Private public release.
Developer
release.
Something like that.
So yeah, I mean, the face recognition stuff is big. I've been hedging my bets that that's going to usurp the fingerprint sensor in general, and not just the, you know, back of the phone hardware fingerprint sensor on the Pixel devices, but also the in-screen stuff that's in the works. I think that in the end, face is going to win out. But
yeah,
we'll see. I mean, I'm sure many devices will do multiple things. Everyone's got to do their A/B tests. They got to figure out what people are using.
And Android is choice. It'll be Samsung is going to be a big, presumably. The S10 is maybe adopting an ultrasonic sensor, which makes a 3D image of your fingerprint versus the optical one right now, which is just a 2D model.
Right.
So this. Yeah, it is Samsung.
Be faster too.
Should be way faster.
So, yeah. Don't know if we have anything else on that for the moment. What other stories do we have this week that were kind of notable or worth talking about? You got about 10 minutes left.
So, do you play StarCraft? Have you ever played StarCraft?
I have not. I've never played it at all. So, you can have a conversation about this with yourself if you want.
Okay, so StarCraft, you can play again. It's a like a PvP kind of game, player versus player kind of game, where you're dropped in a landscape and you control these resources and you have to build more troops and technology and whatnot. That's the basic premise of the game. And Alphabet's DeepMind division created an artificial intelligence agent called AlphaStar, which was able to beat human players 10 to 1 during an exhibition demo. So the reason these AI companies use games is to see how artificial intelligence can handle playing multiple having to juggle multiple factors versus like being able to just specialize in one task. Humans are multitaskers, and computers are not, historically have not been that in the same way. So this is a phenomenal accomplishment in being able to create artificial intelligence that is able to handle so many tasks, is able to keep several priorities and win. It's honestly a bit scary because at the end of the day, StarCraft is like a war simulator. It's a battle simulator. And we're at the point where we have AIs that can win.
AIs that are undefeatable in war, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what DeepMind showed off is obviously just very early days.
StarCraft is very confined variables versus real world scenarios.
Yes, and other factors, but I don't know, maybe we'll regret this one day in the future. But it is cool, I have to admit. Watching it was very wild. At first, I was rooting for the... So it's DeepMind played 10 games against 2 players, and at the beginning, I was like, I was rooting for the AI, but when it started winning and winning and winning, my sympathies switched to humans very quickly. That is the Fallout future, and maybe we'll see it applied in a consumer product setting. Who knows? Assistant, maybe one day. But I'm sure that we're still a few years out from that happening.
So, was this week the first time that we learned, completely unrelated, but was this the first week we learned what avocado was? Because we talked about this last year.
Yes. That's, so, yes, it is Android Q-related. So, during our last Google APK insight, we saw something called avocado, but this 9.10 identifies it as face match, in the same vein as voice match for Google Assistant devices. So we likely have this facial recognition. It's unclear what it's for. The two obvious candidates are smart displays, where, say, you look at the smart display, and the smart display recognizes you and starts surfacing cards, like personalized cards, which is very ideal for like a group set, a communal setting. Versus something like voice match that only works when you speak to it, and that then it loads personal results. But something like face match can make it proactive. Or the second theory, possibility rather, is that it's for Android facial recognition. But basing it out of the Google app would be very odd.
I have a theory that's neither of those. My theory is that this is a Pixel Stand feature.
A Pixel Stand feature.
That if your device is sitting on its Pixel Stand and recognizes your face through the cameras, then it will give you more information on the Pixel Stand screen without you having to authenticate.
That's solid. That's very solid. But the other question is, what kind of information do you want to see? The Pixel Stand is very expensive, and it does some stuff well, but not a lot, so I'm not quite sure what you would want the Pixel Stand to do.
Yeah, I don't know.
More information. Yeah,
but it would also make sense, just, I think, in the bigger picture, for them to be developing this kind of functionality, because, absolutely, you know, these devices have many ways of authenticating, you know, it's like, obviously, we have fingerprint sensors, and you know, that's primarily been the way of authenticating users. But as devices become more ephemeral, we need more options. And voice and face seem to be the two obvious ones.
Yeah, like the end goal of all these authentication systems is that the user never has to interact.
Right.
That it's, you just pick up your phone, it opens. It's exactly like the days of like the first era iPhone, where nobody put passcodes on their phones.
Exactly.
That is the dream.
So, yeah. And, yeah, that's probably the most interesting thing that came out of the Google app this week.
Yep.
What else was there this week? Let's see. Chrome 72, you know, nothing really big there.
Nope.
I don't know. Maybe we should just wrap the show. I think that we just had a pretty boring week this week.
Yeah. All the drama at the top of the show excluded, of course.
Yeah, and that's probably going to develop more over the coming days, and we'll have more to talk about next week. We'll see how...
Controversies, that is going to be the theme of the year. It's going to be the theme of technology for the next year.
Yeah, I wholly agree with you. I think for the next 5 years, privacy is going to be the conversation. It'll be interesting to see how Facebook adapts. Did you see their statement, Facebook's statement?
The midnight statement?
No, at the opening of their earnings today, they said that they have fundamentally, let me see if I can find it. We've fundamentally changed how we run the company. That was the opening statement for earnings today.
That's an interesting one.
We fundamentally changed how we run our company to focus on the biggest social issues, and we're investing more to build new and inspiring ways for people to connect. Which, half of that just sounds like normal
boilerplate.
But the other half of it is like Facebook trying to make a point to Wall Street that they're not just taking all this criticism lying down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's technology is in for a bit of a wild ride. So, buckle up.
Yep. All right. I think we're good for the week.
Yes.
Until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop every week here on YouTube. We record this podcast every Wednesday and publish every Thursday morning. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 95google.com.
Bye.